Hello, everybody, and welcome to Horror Movie Yearbook. I am one of your hosts, Mr. Timothy Long, and I am joined by my other co-host, Mr.
Willie Gibbs.
Willie, how you doing?
I'm good. You know, we're just getting back from Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
An extended weekend.
What did you do all weekend?
I went up to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
What did you really do all weekend? Because I did a little bit of it, too.
What's that? I played a little Friday the 13th video game.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, is that what you were thinking of?
Yeah.
Played a bit. Yeah, we're going to be talking about that in depth on the newest episode of the Midwest Game Nerds podcast.
Yeah.
So we'll make sure we tweet out links and whatnot.
We've got a big group.
Pretty excited about it. Yeah, we got a game night scheduled for tomorrow night. I think we're going to have a full room.
You've been killed by Jason a lot, right?
8 people. Yeah, and I've done a lot of killing as Jason,
too. What's your favorite kill?
My favorite kill. Gosh, I kind of dig the... I like the head punch from part 8. He just punches your head off.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also like the part 6 has one where he can... Like, he sticks the fence post in the ground, and he just kind of pushes your head into it. It's really gross.
I got drowned in a toilet. That was my favorite.
That's cool.
Yeah.
The head smash in the door is pretty cool, too. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fun game.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
I mean, it's got its issues, but it's fun.
I think, much like Friday the 13th series, you could say, it has its issues.
Yeah, it's an authentic experience, if
but
nothing
it delivers
else.
The goods.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a lot like the series.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying it.
Good. Yeah. Not that I didn't care that you went up north.
That was fun, too.
Yes.
Yeah,
I went up north as well, and it was very relaxing.
Yeah.
Except for I'd take a dog to the hospital, but we won't get it.
Yeah, that sucks.
She's fine. The dog's fine.
Yeah.
So
she's all right.
Yeah. It was scary, though. It sucked.
Spooky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't swallow bees.
No, especially if you're allergic to them.
Yeah.
As a dog.
Yeah.
And you're a bulldog anyway, and you have trouble breathing as it is.
Not good.
Scary stuff. But fine. Willie, let's get moving. We got a busy show.
Sure.
Feedback.
Yeah. Send us feedback. Facebook.com/horrormovieyearbook, Twitter at HMYearbook, and you can email us, horrormovieyearbook@gmail.com. Those are all great ways to get a hold of us. Send us feedback. Give us ideas for episodes. You know, if you got anything you want to hear us talk about, by all means, throw it out there. If you got anything you want us to talk about, that you want to spread the good word about a horror movie, maybe, or let us know that something's not so hot, you know, any of that, we'll accept it. So... And then rate and review us on iTunes. We say this every time. Please do it. It's awesome. It helps us. And we appreciate it. So, yeah, let's start off with Facebook feedback. We posed the question, what's your favorite horror movie of 1968? And my dad responded with Night of the Living Dead. He said it's a groundbreaker in horror, which it is.
He also said they're coming to get you, Barbara. Not even close.
Not even close. Yeah, that was good. That was good. Yeah, quite a zinger there. Yeah, I know he's a big fan of that film. He's the reason I watched it, so yeah, he got me into the zombie genre, which we'll talk more about later in this episode, so thanks, Dad. Allison Jones on Twitter responded, said that she's seen the big ones, Night of the Living Dead and Rosemary's Baby, both of which we'll be talking about this episode, and said that she wants to watch Curse of the Crimson Altar now.
Yeah, Curse of the Crimson Altar stars... I believe Vincent Price. I'm looking it up right now.
Sounds like a Vincent Price
because
movie.
Because when she wrote that, I went, wow. Yeah, The Crimson Cult was also what it's... Oh, no, excuse me. It's Christopher Lee and Boris Karloff and Michael Gow.
Wow.
And Barbara Steele.
What a quadruple threat.
And like I looked at it and I went, whoa, I want to watch that. And then I searched around all over for it and I can't find it anywhere.
Wow.
Not even like anywhere in quotes. Yeah. So... but
that's too bad.
It's about a man who stops at a lodge where he meets a professor of witchcraft, who is Boris Karloff. Yeah, and dreams of a green-faced witch, which is Barbara Steele. So I want to watch this, too.
Sounds pretty sweet to me. Sign me up.
British film, yeah.
I dig it.
Cool. Yeah, look out for us on Midwest Game Nerds.
Yeah, like I said, we'll make sure we send out... links to the show once it's live and everything.
Yep.
I think it'll be fun. It'll be fun to talk about. So.
Yeah, we're going to have to talk about Chad quite a bit.
Chad's truly the hero of that game. So.
One of the counselors.
Hey, when we play our game tomorrow night, can we all be Chad?
We had an entire game of Chads
good.
Running around one time. So.
Good.
So, yeah, we're all going to be Chad.
Good.
You think it will throw Jason off, but...
No, he just sees a teenager. It doesn't matter to him. He doesn't care.
Right.
He's hungry.
He's hungry. Big dog's got to eat. Yep. All right, Willie, are you ready to go to the time machine?
Let's do it.
We're going way back.
Way punch it in. Back.
1968.
Yep.
Give me a noise.
Do-do-do-do-do-do!
Very 60-ish. Hey, 1968 is crazy.
Yeah?
It's nuts.
Okay.
I'm happy we picked this year. This is one of the most newsworthy of years in human history, or at least modern history, I think.
All right.
Some stuff went down.
See, I didn't have to do any research this episode. Right. This is fun for me.
Right.
This is your turn to do research, and I love these ones.
You're gonna hear stuff that's happened and then and go, whoa, that was 68. And then you're going to hear it again. You go, whoa, that was also 68.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff going on. You could write a book on it. I'm sure historians have. North Vietnam launches the Tet Offensive against the United States and South Vietnam. Mm. The Tet Offensive signified the beginning of the end of U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War.
Yep.
Coordinated attack by 85,000 Viet Cong and North Vietnamese targeted 36 major cities and towns in South Vietnam and caught the U.S. by surprise. So we are in the midst of that at this point.
Not good.
Yep. Martin Luther King on April 4th, was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee.
Jeez.
And that was on top of the Lorraine Motel. He was struck by a bullet at 6:01 p.m., only 39 years old.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm.
That's sad.
Yeah, lost my spot here. Another assassination only a couple months later in June. Robert F. Kennedy was assassinated in Los Angeles 2 months later. After that, Kennedy was gunned down by an assassin at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles. The attack took place shortly after Kennedy had wrapped up a speech in the hotel ballroom.
Yeah, he was in the kitchen, I believe.
Yep. Yeah. Yep, as he cut through a kitchen corridor on his way to another part of the building, a Jordanian-born Palestinian named Saran opened fire, hitting Kennedy in the head and the back.
Mm-hmm.
October 16th, U.S. athletes... take a stand at the Summer Olympics during the 1968 Summer Olympics in Mexico City, which was a mess, by the way.
Yeah.
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 I mean, I probably could have told you Mexico City was going to kind of be a disaster for that.
Not as bad as the Olympics in, what was it, Stokey or Russia or something?
Oh, Stokey, was it?
I don't remember what it was called.
Stochi. Yeah.
Yeah. Bob Costas had like the worst case of pink eye.
Pink eye.
The bathrooms weren't finished. There were like toilets that were like grouped together and
right.
Yeah. It was not good.
They violate human rights all the time.
Constantly.
Yeah. Two black athletes stage a silent demonstration against racial discrimination. This was Tommy Smith and John Carlos. They held their fists up during the national anthem. It's a pretty iconic shot of them on the metal podium. November, Star Trek airs American television's first interracial kiss.
Ah.
You know who that was between?
Was it Uhura and Kirk? Do they ever smooch?
Yes. They always play it up like, and it is a big deal because it's the first interracial kiss on American television. But it's like, if I remember, it's because they're both like enslaved by this alien race and they're like forced to do it. So it's not like a romantic kiss.
No.
but Shatner always plays it up like, it's the greatest thing that's ever happened.
He knows what's up.
He like planned it, and it moved forward the human race because of it. And December 24th, Apollo 8 is the first manned spacecraft to orbit the moon. Three astronauts circled the moon 10 times. Jim Lovell, Bill Anders, and Frank Borman became the first human beings to travel to the moon.
Very cool.
Crazy year in general. We're about to... Lyndon B. Johnson is the president at the time.
Mm.
We're about to enter the age of Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
This is that campaign, presidential campaign. He would take over in 69. Here in Detroit, the 67 riots are the ones that everybody kind of remembers, but there were still riots in 68. There's a 68 riot. Actually, there were riots throughout the country after Martin Luther King was shot,
mm-hmm.
And Detroit was just one of them. So, and it's also the year that the Tigers won the World Series, which is kind of one of those weird things that just happens during a time of unrest.
Very strange.
Very strange. You ready for some top 10 movies?
Yeah, absolutely.
This is such an amazing list of movies.
I can't wait.
Can you guess what the number one movie is? It's by someone who directed a horror movie.
Someone who directed a horror movie.
Gosh. Yeah. Let me know if you want another hint.
Sure, throw one
out. It was
there.
A Stephen King book.
Okay. Directed a movie based on a Stephen King book. I have no idea. I don't know. I have no
idea. The movie that's not number one wasn't the Stephen King book,
oh, okay.
obviously. 2001.
Oh, okay. Yep. Okay. Wow.
Number two, Funny Girl, Barbara Streisand. Oh, you're supposed to go.
You're fine.
Whatever. Number three, The Love Bug, Ol' Herbie.
Yep.
Number four, The Odd Couple.
Okay.
Walter Matthau.
Like The Odd Couple.
Jack Lemmon. Number five, Bullet, Steve McQueen. Number six, A Romeo and Juliet. I don't even know there was one in the 68.
Is that the one they always showed in school?
Probably.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I can't remember who was in it.
Mm-hmm. I remember they showed a boob, though.
Oh, do they?
And they showed it in class, and I was like, whoa.
I was wondering you had to get a note for. Yeah.
Yep. It was a groundbreaker right there.
Number seven, Oliver! Exclamation point. Number eight, Rosemary's Baby. Listen to these last three.
Okay.
Sweet. Number eight, Rosemary's Baby. Number nine, Planet of the Apes. Number 10, Night of the Living Dead.
Oh.
That's how you close it out. That's a pretty sweet list anyway, actually.
Those are all pretty, they're pretty downer movies.
Right.
Of course, when you look at what was going on at the time, you can kind of understand it.
Some top songs of 1968. I'm just going to be honest with you. I know maybe half of these.
Sure.
Number 10, Tighten Up, Archie Bell and the Drills. Don't know that one. Number 9, Mrs. Robinson, Simon and Garfunkel.
Mm-hmm.
Number 8, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Hugo Montenegro. Number 7, This Guy's in Love with You, Herb Alpert. Don't know that one. Number 6, Sunshine of Your Love by Creed. Okay. Cream, not Creed.
Not Creed.
We got a couple years before that. I don't know if they did a cover of it or what. People Got to Be Free by The Rascals, number 5. Sitting on the Dock of the Bay by Otis Redding, number 4.
I love that song.
Honey by Bobby Goldsboro, number 3. Love is Blue by Paul Mariatt, number 2. I don't know that song. And number 1, this one's pretty obvious, I guess. It's Hey Jude by the Beatles.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So, interesting year, I would say.
Yeah, I'd say. Loaded. Loaded year. Maybe the most eventful year we've talked about so far.
I would probably say so.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty much considered one of the more eventful years ever. So, yeah.
Wow.
I would think so. All right, you ready to talk about our first movie?
Let's do it.
Night of the Living Dead, directed by one Mr. George Romero. A disparate group of individuals take refuge in an abandoned house when corpses begin to leave the graveyard in search of fresh human bodies to devour. The pragmatic Ben does his best to control the situation, but when the reanimated bodies surround the house, the other survivors begin to panic. As any semblance of order within the group begins to dissipate, the zombies start to find ways inside, and one by one, the living humans become the prey of the deceased ones. I took the long description.
That's good.
Really
I like
it.
That.
I took the Google description.
They become the prey.
Willie, you're a big Romero fan. We've covered
mm-hmm.
this. You're a big fan of all of the Dead movies
mm-hmm.
that were released before.
The first four.
Yeah, okay. That was a better way of putting what I was going to
first
put.
First four.
What do you think of Night of the Living Dead?
Oh, it's a genre classic, and for a good reason, you know? I mean, this is a movie that... Romero will always say it. I think he'll always say that they just wanted to make a low budget horror movie to see if they can make some money. That was the goal. It was a low budget B horror movie to make some cash. They even get into some of the goofy B movie stuff in terms of they hint that the zombie apocalypse is caused by like a satellite crash, and that's such a classic like monster movie kind of thing. Like the radiation from the satellites causing the zombies to come up. But the thing is. There's a lot more going on in this movie, whether it was intentional or not. I find it hard to believe that a lot of like the racial tensions didn't come into play here when they were writing this script and when they were making this movie. But like I said, Romero kind of claims that was never his intention. So, you know, regardless, I think it can be read into here. And I think that's what sets this movie apart from other movies, from your generic kind of B-horror movies of the time. The fact that they cast a black man in the leading role, he's the hero of the film. I mean, he's the one that's the most resourceful. He's the one that is saving the most lives. He's the most level-headed. He's the one who's taking charge of the situation. And in 1968, that wasn't terribly common to see. So that right there is a groundbreaker. And then you go into the fact that if you're at the mall, right? And I know most people don't go to the mall anymore, but if you're at the mall, right? Or even if you're on Amazon, you're just surfing around Amazon looking for cool stuff. Odds are you're going to bump into something with a zombie, whether it's a video game or a movie or a comic book or a t-shirt or a poster or a Funko Pop vinyl. Those are all the hotness right now, yeah. Right? And people like those.
I like them.
I do too. Yeah, they're kind of cool, actually. I don't know why I said it like that. I think they're neat. I have a Christmas Groot. He's pretty cute. Yeah. You're going to find something zombie-related. And most of that stuff is Walking Dead-related. But regardless, George Romero invented the modern zombie.
Yeah.
This is not, and he doesn't call them zombies, mind you, in any of his movies. And this one, I think the common term is ghouls.
They call them ghouls,
which
yep.
is kind of fun. But...
And there have been zombie movies before.
Absolutely.
This one, but this is White Zombie, mm-hmm. like King of the Zombies, Voodoo Island.
Yep.
Were a couple. They all revolved around kind of like witch doctors in Haiti.
The traditional form of zombieism. You know what I mean? That classic voodoo people brought back from the dead to become servants for like somebody evil who's living, right?
Right.
He's sicking them on people left and right. This was different. These are dead people that get up and want to eat living people. That's a zombie. Like that when you say zombie, that's what people think of now. They don't think of voodoo, which is amazing. And this is all because of George Romero. Yeah. Like you can't when you look at the other great villains and creatures and whatnot in horror history. I mean, like vampires. It's hard to trace back a specific history of vampires. Like the idea, the concept of a vampire, whether it's the I want to suck your blood vampire. Or energy vampires in certain Native American cultures. Vampires have been around for a long time. Bram Stoker didn't come up with vampires. The idea of a vampire, of a creature that could drain a human to maintain its youth and its sustenance, went long before that. Werewolves. They come from every culture. I mean, there's the from the skinwalkers of once again Native American culture to like the kind of classic European werewolf in like Scotland and England. Those have been around forever. It's not one. The Wolfman, the Universal Wolfman movie, did not invent the werewolf.
Right.
This is an invention of a type of horror icon that sits just alongside those now, and we have a guy who's still alive. Who created it? That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Like, when you really think about it. And that's why this movie's so impressive to me. That coupled with the social commentary, which is something that oftentimes horror gets kind of poo-pooed by people, mm-hmm. especially critics. I think it's changing a little bit now. I think there's a shift happening. I don't think it's as...
There are quite a few. There are... I have seen this, well, in the wake of Get Out, there have been people that seem to be taking it a little more seriously, but it's kind of condescending sometimes, too, where they're like, Get Out is, like, is the only movie that kind of deals with those issues, and it's kind of annoying.
Yeah.
But at least they're taking it a little more seriously now.
Yeah, it's one of those things, it's almost a double-edged sword, because you're like, yeah, it's awesome that they're, like, actually looking at these movies now.
Right.
And taking, like... considering them pieces of art or works of art. And I'm not saying every horror movie is a work of art. I mean, there's...
No, but I think we've covered quite a few on here.
That are.
And that deal with a lot of the themes of their... the ideas of their time, so...
Yeah, and I think it'd be hard to argue against any of... like, a lot of... the, like, 90% of the movies we've talked about.
Right.
Yeah. But this is inarguably... It's a work of art. It's a work of commentary, a social commentary. It's kind of a... I don't know. It feels like you've got this group of kids that are based out of Pittsburgh, right? And they got together and they said, let's just shoot a movie. It was very much guerrilla filmmaking, you know? And I think it's kind of cool because here you are in a time in 68 of civil unrest, of revolution. We're at an all-time low in terms of how people feel about the government, the military, people in power. Not just in the U.S., but abroad as well. You know, we've got, we're still reeling from the death of Kennedy, of John F. Kennedy, and then Robert's killed, mm-hmm. and then MLK's killed, and it's like, it's crazy. I mean, it's, you're witnessing the death, you're kind of witnessing the death of the future of America in a way. You know, I think in 68, you're kind of, you feel like you're watching the country die.
Yeah. The entire, like, I mean, the entire psychology of the country around the time is pretty, the morale, I guess.
Yeah.
It's pretty low, and this is, I mean, it's on the descent, and it just kind of keeps kind of, like, going low from this point. We'll get into a little bit of it with Rosemary's Baby, too, mm-hmm. Where the country's at in the headspace of the time. But, yeah, this is right along with it.
Yeah, but and so in a cool way, this is kind of a, yeah, it was just intended to be a B-horror movie or whatever, but... But this movie's kind of like its own mini little revolution of sorts,
mm-hmm.
Both in how it was made and how they just said, let's just go out and shoot this thing and make our own, make something for ourselves, and also in terms of the storytelling. It's kind of revolutionary in both ways, and I applaud it for that. I think it's a fantastic film. I think it's scarier than shit too. I still get creeped out by it.
The black and white works really well.
Oh, 100%. This is one of those movies where, you know, I don't think you hear it as much as you used to, certainly when I was a kid. I remember trying to get friends to watch this once I had discovered it, you know, a couple times, and then almost instantly saying, it's black and white. I think that's starting to go away now, too, where, like, people are more accepting of watching stuff that's a little older.
You ever watched the colorized version?
I have.
Yeah, me too.
It's fine.
Those things don't bother me as long as I still have the black and white version.
Yeah,
I think the disc I had the black and white version and the color version.
I think I've got both on the one I have too. So, but I always watch the black and white version. The fact that the colorized version exists doesn't bother me. It is what it is. But
that was Ted Turner's thing for a while. He's just gonna colorize all the old movies.
Every old movie. Yeah he's a character.
I mean, I get why he did it.
I understand
the reasoning behind it. I just, yeah, whatever.
It's really just the same reason they're kind of remaking movies now.
Right.
You know, it's to contemporize.
Live action Disney movies.
Yeah. It's to bring it to a new audience. But, no, the black and white definitely helps. I remember before I pass it on to you, I want to hear what you have to say about it. But I remember sitting in my living room. I remember this vividly. Sitting in my living room, I had popped in the VHS tape, and I was watching it. And I remember they keep cutting back to... It's basically the same series of shots over and over again. And the continuity is actually a little wonky on it, but I don't even care. They keep cutting these shots of the field just outside the house and these zombies slowly approaching the house. And it's this feeling of, like, crawling death. Like, it's just, like, you can't do anything to stop it. It's coming. It's coming for you.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting there on a Lazy Boy, and I was sitting right next to the... living room window. We had a good, nice, big, long window. Not a bay window, but a nice, big window in the front. And I remember I'd watch it, and then I'd kind of peek out the blinds, because I felt like if I looked out there, I was going to see, like, this mob of people walking towards me. And I remember being totally into it and totally freaked out by that. That one stuck with me. So, yeah, it's a fantastic film. And really, the first, I would say it's hard to argue against the first few in this series of films. Yeah.
There's not a lot to say about this movie at this point, and especially now that you've gone.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, you're totally fine, because that's pretty much what I was going to say. I like the movie. It's weird now that Day has had this, like, reappraisal, I think, in a lot of circles. I almost think this is the forgotten one of the first three.
Weird, isn't it?
Yeah. I would like to stick up. I like Land, but, like, that's about it. Like,
yeah, I enjoy Land.
I'm not going any further than, like, I like Land.
Like, I have fun with it.
Me too.
Yep.
But this is the one, weirdly enough, now that I think gets kind of forgotten, because everybody kind of goes to Day and Dawn first in their head. I really like this movie. I think it's clever in the way it tells its story. I think a lot of the news reports, how it conveys information, is a really clever way to do things on a low budget. And especially around that time, because 68 was kind of the dawn of, like, live broadcasting.
Well, that was, when you look at the Vietnam War, that was, like, the first televised war.
Right, right.
You know.
So yeah, it's interesting the way it does it. It does it on a kind of a shoestring budget. Do you want to just talk about Dwayne Jones a little, main character, Ben?
Oh, he's incredible.
He's so good in this movie.
I love... the thing about... I have issues with a couple of the characters, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I have issues with some of the female characters.
They can be very shrill.
Yeah, and they can be kind of cardboard a little bit. I mean, Barbara's... Beautiful woman, very striking. There's something about her that you can't take your eyes off her. I don't know what it is. She's got a certain quality about her. But and she starts off kind of kicking some ass. You know, I mean, to a certain extent, she's certainly resourceful enough to try and get the hell away from the situation. Once Dwayne Jones enters the picture, she kind of just becomes catatonic. And I, you know, it's a little disappointing, and I think it's something that was very much remedied in the Tom Savini remake.
Yeah.
That's probably the biggest change, certainly, is the character of Barbara. And I'm glad they did it.
Well, I think he even rectifies it. In Dawn.
Yeah, he does. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does, absolutely. Because Galen Ross's character in Dawn is very much... She almost starts off how Barbara is during the majority of this movie, where she's very much curled up in the fetal position, not wanting to do anything. And then she ends it by being very strong and very empowered and kicking just as much ass as the rest of the guys. This one, it's a product of the time a little bit. But Dwayne Jones...
Yeah, and here's what's I want to jump in just real quick. Yeah. Sorry. Here's what's weird is I would make the argument that horror movies are very progressive when it comes to female characters and actually not as progressive as they should be when it comes to minority characters.
Agreed.
This is like the opposite in 1968. And I think some of it is because the character wasn't written to be a black man. He was just cast that way.
Yeah, he cast the best actor.
Which
is honestly the way I feel like we don't do enough of that.
No, yeah. And what's amazing to me is, and now when he's shooting the movie, though, you can tell it's in his mind. Because of there's nothing specifically racial about the character in the movie, I don't think. You could pop in anything, but it's so amazing to me how the role race plays that just by casting a black person, the themes all of a sudden go a completely different route than what they would. The way some of the characters look when they see a black man giving them orders is really, really interesting.
Especially Harry.
Yep.
Who is very much the human antagonist in this movie.
Right. And I think even though he didn't intentionally write him as a black man, when he's shooting it, you can definitely tell that it's in his mind.
Yeah.
That this is a black man. Yeah, it's not really a big difference of character. One of the things that popped in my head this time while watching is kind of Creed, the movie Creed. The movie Creed isn't necessarily that specific to a race either. It's really just, it's kind of the same story as Rocky, only with a black male in the leading role. And now, then all of a sudden you do that, you put the black male in the American trunks, and it's a completely different story. And I think that's fascinating, kind of sad in a lot of ways.
Sure.
But just really, really fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely.
To me.
Yeah, no, he's a rock star in this movie. You think about Bullet. They could have cast Steve McQueen in this role if they could have afforded him. And would he have done a great job? Oh, I'm sure. I'm a Steve McQueen fan. I think he would have handled himself nicely. But you would have lost so much from not having Dwayne Jones in this role.
Mm-hmm.
And he smacks the shit out of a white woman in this movie.
Right.
Like that. Can you imagine people in the theater?
Yeah.
They'd probably be losing. I don't know. It just... what I like about the Ben character as well is that he feels like a real person. Yeah, he's cool and collected and composed, and he's kicking ass and taking names, and he's in charge of the group. But at the end of when it all comes down to it, he cannot help himself but get into it with Harry by the end of it. He can't, because he's only human, and the guy pushes him to the point where he just can't.
Right.
You know, he can't take it anymore. So, understandably so. I would have...
I'm just looking at it. Dwayne Jones is also in Ganja and Hess.
Yeah.
It's really about the only other.
He doesn't have a ton of big credits.
Right.
Which is unfortunate. I'm a big Dwayne Jones fan, so.
Very good in this movie. Yeah. I don't have a lot else to say about this one.
No, it's one of those tricky ones, man, because it's been talked about so many times
in
so many ways.
We've got another tricky one coming up, too.
Yeah.
So that's all right.
Yeah, no. If you haven't seen Night of the Living Dead, or maybe it's been a long time, check it out.
Especially if it's been a long time, because I'm guessing
most everybody listening to this has seen
Night of the Living Dead.
But,
or at least seen enough of it. Or seen enough zombie movies to where you felt like you see it. But watch it again.
Sure.
A fresh look.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We here at the Horror Movie Yearbook recommend Night of the Living
Dead. Yeah, we sure do. Yeah. Hey, speaking of groundbreaking, what a groundbreaking recommendation.
You guys heard this movie called The Thing? Gotta go out there and watch it. All right, Willie, let's move on then.
You guys should check out Halloween.
That carpenter fellow, he's made some good pictures.
He sure has.
We're going to move ahead. Willie, you had a segment you wanted to talk about here.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it touches on kind of what I brought up earlier about, you know, anywhere you go, you're going to see zombie stuff. You know, it's hard to escape it. Especially with the popularity of The Walking Dead. That show kind of took over the world for a while there, for a couple years there. And it's still popular, but I mean, for a while there, it felt like any store you walked into, there was Walking Dead something. Usually with Norman Reedus' face on it, but...
Was he Daryl?
Daryl. Walking yeah, we call it Walking Daryl. I guess something I see pop up oftentimes, I think it gets blamed on, I don't know, oftentimes it gets pigeonholed like, oh, that's like a hipster mentality. I don't think it's always fair. What I'm talking about is the concept that, let's say that you love something, you're really passionate about it, you like something that's a little more niche. Like, let's say that you were somebody who read The Walking Dead comics, right? You got into them when they first started, you were there for issue number one, you read it all, you were super into it, and now it's everywhere, and everybody's talking about it, and it seems like now, I think we've all had that feeling of, oh man, you know, like, I think it's hard not to feel that way sometimes, with that feeling of like, on one hand, you're happy that other people are discovering it, on the other hand, you're kind of sad because now it's everybody else's.
Right.
You know what I mean
your
by
favorite
that?
Your favorite band that you saw at a club, at a nightclub, made it big.
Yeah, and now they're all over TV and they're doing car commercials and you're like, oh.
Right.
Okay. I don't know. I guess
you don't want to see them succeed and make money.
In a weird way, you know, which is strange.
Just being a dick, but yeah.
It's strange. But no, I'm curious, do you have any experiences like that? I mean, is there anything that you...
I've been thinking about this since you brought this up to me. And it's tough. The first thing that popped in my head was when I started reading comic books in the 90s, comic book movies were a disaster for the most part. It wasn't until like Blade and the first X-Men, I think, that they
started to turn
a little bit. And now you can't, I mean, it's every weekend. And then there's part of me, and I know you're in the same boat, that it feels like, wow, this is like, this would have been a dream back when we were kids reading comic books in the 90s. But then there is part of me that looks back at that time period and goes, wow, we were getting some like kind of interesting stuff too around that time. Blade, X-Men, Spider-Man. And it was kind of nice just having it once in a while. And then now that it's exploded, it seems like it's overkill sometimes.
Sure.
It feels like. And I don't want to complain about it because I go see them and I enjoy half of them. But there is the other one, I guess I could to tie into that maybe a little bit is, well, I guess, I mean, it's tough because when I, Evil Dead a little bit, when I was younger, it was kind of like the cool thing. But then even that,
and
even
you guys,
that was
you guys
kinda...
listening have to remember that Tim and I have pre-internet childhoods.
Right.
So we're not, it's not going to be the same for necessarily everybody listening to us, but I didn't touch anything related to the internet until I was probably 12.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's so weird now. I don't even think Evil Dead is a cult movie anymore.
No.
And like when I was watching it when I was younger, like I would go over to my friend's house and watch it, like I'd be like, this is a cult thing. Only certain people get it because we were the only people in our town
who knew
that, like, watched it, knew it. And there were people at other towns doing the same thing, but you didn't know that because you weren't connected to them on the internet.
Exactly. That's what's so fascinating to me about this is that's something that the internet totally changed, is now there's discussion forums for every movie that comes out. You can connect with people, which is awesome.
It's great. I think so, too.
It's really cool. But on the flip side of that, often it's so hard to find something that feels like it's yours. And that's probably a selfish feeling to have, you know,
to feel like you
need to hog something to yourself, but... That's the way I was with the zombie movies, you know? I didn't know anybody else other than me and my little brother who liked zombie stuff. No other kids in the neighborhood had ever seen Night of the Living Dead or Dawn of the Dead. Probably because my parents were a little more liberal with what they let us watch.
Right.
But that's what I'm saying, though, is that you couldn't go online and see, oh, wow, everybody else loves this movie. Or, you know, obviously, Dawn of the Dead became an iconic genre film because of the amount of people that love it. But there was no outlet for that. You know, so, I mean, I felt like we were the only kids in the world who were running around outside in our front yard, backyard, climbing up the front deck, pretending we were, you know, being invaded by zombies and had our toy Star Wars guns and we were killing zombies left. Like, I felt like we were it, you know?
Right.
And it's amazing because now, like, you look and you, I mean, I can't. I mean, you couldn't even try to name all the zombie video games that are available now. You know, and I remember when it was just like Resident Evil was like the one
right.
zombie game available. So it's interesting because I, in a weird way, and it wasn't because I. It's not because I get I got angry about this stuff becoming mainstream. I'm actually happy it did because it means more people are able to experience this stuff. But in a weird way, it almost burned me out of it. You know, I think that's the thing I always worry about when stuff becomes, air quotes, mainstream, is I worry that the overexposure is going to burn out my interest for it a little bit. And that did happen with the zombie genre for a while. Mm-hmm. Until I rewatched Dawn of the Dead recently, not long back. And I went, wow, okay, never mind. Like, it's still amazing. But I remember there was a time there for 5-6 years where I didn't watch any of the Dead films, which was weird for me because I'd watch them a couple times a year usually. So I'm happy that I'm falling back in love with the zombie genre again.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes me happy.
Did you see The Girl with All the Gifts, by the way?
Not yet.
I really want you to see it because I wasn't crazy about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then recently I've seen a few people like tweet or write about it. And they love it, and they bring up things that make me go, why didn't I love it? So now I really want you to watch it.
Okay. I will, and I'll let you know what I think. Yeah.
But
yeah. No, and same for superhero stuff, too. Not horror-related, but I think the only thing that bothers me with, like, the superhero stuff, and it's this once again, this is probably me being a total douche, and I'm sorry if I come off that way, but, like, when I hear people... like, after one of those movies, talking about, like, oh, that's so-and-so, and they do this, and, like, they're totally wrong, it bums me out.
Yeah.
Like, that always breaks my heart a little bit, because I'm like, damn it. Like, yeah. I guess my thing is, like, if you're like, getting into something, and you, like, and you want to be a fan of it, like, if you're interested in it, and you want to, like, delve deeper into your interest in something, like, ask people about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think most human beings... like would love to sit there and talk to you about stuff they like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do too. Yeah.
Cause I've met a couple people on my journeys that, you know, like they weirdly talked like they were like experts on something. And I'm not saying I am, but like that they were like, they were like knew everything about something. And I'm sitting there going like, no.
Might be a personal trait too.
Yeah.
It might be.
I had somebody at work talking about, how they were really excited for, that the Avengers were gonna fight Darkseid,
right?
Some of their favorite Avengers villains, and I was like, oh my god! And that's probably I don't know.
No, I know what you mean. And
it was bumming me
you're
out.
Too nice to like correct them to their face. Like, hey,
yeah, I won't do it.
Yeah,
no.
Which is fair. I don't know.
Nah.
But I mean, it's weird to me too because, like you brought up with the message boards, you can find like message boards or maybe not message boards, like a Reddit.
Yeah,
I guess would be what it is now. I don't know. I don't keep up with the kids anymore. But you could find like a subreddit or something that would just be all about zombie movies. And I think in the long run, I'm with you. It's cool because I, through message boards or even social media, I have learned so much and found so many different perspectives on things that like it's broadened my mind.
Yeah, I've been on the opposite end of this too, where like I discovered something kind of late in the game.
Yeah.
Like later on than the core audience did. And I was kind of like the newbie for, you know, whatever it was.
The example I was going to bring it up real quick was Metallica.
Oh.
So, I mean, I was, I think when the Black Album came out was 92, right? Mm. So when I was younger, and it was probably around the time like Load and Reload came out too, but I remember like seeing videos on MTV for the Black Album or seeing like Unforgiven, I mean, or Enter Sandman, the videos on there and thinking like, oh, this is a cool song. And then like... and if I were to listen to the Black Album, I'm like, oh, yeah, Metallica's sweet. And then all of a sudden I go on message boards and you get like hardcore fans going like, that album sucks.
Isn't that always weird? Yeah. It's always so strange.
They're like, they sold out there.
So weird, isn't it?
But it did have me go back and listen to the first Metallica.
So in a way it worked out great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it's fascinating. Sometimes, I don't think that album sucks, by the way. In a lot of ways, I think they just made better, more structured music. On that album. It's too long. but I get what people are saying, and if you're a fan of it, if you're a fan of their previous stuff, I can see why you might not like that album.
But that being said, if you're a fan of the earlier albums, don't crap all over somebody because they like the Black Album. That's not nice.
And especially if that's what introduced them,
too. Yeah, because that was they had the same feelings listening to that album as you did listening to previous albums.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That's a slippery slope.
Oh, if I brought it on the podcast, it's an Edgar Wright quote. I don't want to break it up because it's one of my favorite things that happened. And it sums up this part of the conversation, I think, perfectly. They were at a screening. He had a screening for Evil Dead 2. I think it's like his favorite movie of all time. At a screening Evil Dead 2. And he asked everybody in the crowd, he goes, "All right, is there anybody here who hasn't seen Evil Dead 2? And like one girl like raised her hand. And the crowd like peeped some people in the crowd started to like boo her. And he stands up and he goes, "Wait a minute. Don't you like she gets to experience Evil Dead 2 now for the first time in her entire life. Like, think about how awesome that is." So, I mean, that kind of sums it up for me.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Don't crap on people who haven't seen stuff.
No, show it to them.
Show it to them.
Yeah.
Especially if you think
teach them.
Right.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right. You ready to move on?
Let's do it.
Another unheard of, unknown movie coming up here. Rosemary's Baby. You ever heard of it?
No, is this the one? God, is this the one where they like adopt a kid, and he wears a little fedora kind of hat?
No, what? Oh, is that the Elvin?
Yeah,
is that the joke you're going for? Sorry.
No, I started losing it as I was saying. That's. I forgot the Omen apparently. So he doesn't wear a fedora. What does he wear?
He doesn't. I don't. Fuck it. I don't.
Little beret or something.
He wears a nice trendy hat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rosemary's Baby is directed by one Mr. Roman Polanski. Sure, we won't get into any trouble there. Young wife. Oh, God, I went too far. Young wife comes to believe that her offspring is not of this world. Sums it up. Wayfish, Rosemary Woodhouse, Mia Farrow, and her struggling actor husband, Guy. I forgot his name was Guy. Moved to a New York City apartment with an ominous reputation and odd neighbors, Roman and Minnie, cast of it. When Rosemary becomes pregnant, she becomes increasingly isolated, and the diabolical truth is revealed only after Rosemary gets birth. Guy, wow. Played by John Cassavetes, by the way.
Yeah, he's a rock star in this movie, too.
Willie, do you recommend Rosemary's Baby?
That's amazing.
It's really good.
Yeah, another reason... Another one that's a genre classic and for good reason. The thing is, like, there's so much, once again, there's so much out there on Rosemary's Baby. There's so much commentary on it. There's so much, there's so many probably incredible scholarly articles written about what this movie really is trying to say. And I'm not going to try and get into that.
No.
I'm just going to talk about surface level Rosemary's Baby here. And it's an exercise in tension and in dread. Like, this is a movie that... It's one of those rare movies where it doesn't matter what's going on in the frame. It doesn't matter what the music sounds like in the background, what the characters are doing. There's like this constant hanging sense of dread and helplessness over the course of this movie. And it just increases as the movie goes on and Rosemary's plight becomes worse. I don't know. From the opening scenes where they're kind of looking at the apartment and, you know, like they haven't even really moved in yet, you know, to scenes where Rosemary is starting to look sick and starting to, I mean, it just from beginning to end, the thing just feels something bad going on here. And it makes you feel uneasy the whole time, which is good. Also, you're kind of in a situation in this movie where you're trying to figure out who to trust and who not to as a viewer. Because, you know, Rosemary is being kind of accosted at all sides by people who may or may not be on her side. So you start to question people and you start to, I don't know, it's cool. They kind of put you in her mindset of, like, who can I trust? Who can I go to? What are they trying to do to me? Because even she doesn't really know at first and she has to piece it together. It's, if anything, I just walked away going, damn, like, Polanski really... He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
You know, say what you will, obviously, about the guy's personal life, and we won't go too far into that here, but, you know, but in terms of just pure talent as a director, the guy's top-notch. There's
especially
no question.
This time.
Yeah,
yeah,
this is like
prime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, good on him for crafting the story and making it work so well. And oftentimes, there's not a lot going on in this movie.
I was just gonna jump it for a horror movie with this little quote unquote horror in it. It's riveting. I mean, I forgot how much of a domestic drama this is, and a lot of it is the interplay between the two characters and the weirdness of the neighbors and everything.
They're so creepy.
They are creepy. And it's believably creepy. Especially like, especially in New York.
I feel like this could happen to somebody.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Which is weird, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's believable. Guy, I think we talked a little bit in our pre-production meeting at work. We talked a little bit about how Guy, John Cassavetes, feels like a precursor to Peter Sarsgaard.
Yeah, if you listen to our class of what, 2005?
No, it was 2007 or
If you listen to that
2009,
episode,
no, it was 2009.
Okay, you know how we feel about Peter Sarsgaard.
Orphan. Yeah.
Orphan. And this is a weirdly kind of
John Cassavetes in this. He's such a dick.
He really is.
He's got to be one of the bigger dicks in horror movies, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he sells out his wife. He sells out his unborn child.
Yeah.
He's
really condescending towards his wife at all times.
Well, that's the thing is, before he even makes, and you never really find out exactly when he makes the deal with the devil kind of thing. I don't think they ever really tell you exactly, like, how long into being there they do it. I mean, for all you know, he made the deal before they even moved in. That's always a possibility, too.
Right.
Because you really don't know. But he does it all for the sake of his career.
I know.
You know, like it's, and the thing is, it's not just like, it's not just that he's, like, his wife is impregnated with the spawn of the devil, which is bad enough, mm-hmm. more than bad enough, but, like, there's another actor who goes blind, like, in a freak accident because of, like, it's horrible. I don't know. He's a shit.
He is a shit. Thank you. That might be the perfect way to sum it up.
Yeah.
He's a shit. No, I agree with you, Willie. I think this is a good movie.
Mm-hmm. Another groundbreaking opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have much else to say about this. I think there is... I've never read the book.
I've never read the book either. I've always...
Did a little bit of research on it. It's... I think this one is a little bit, I guess, on the fence. I'm searching for the right word and I'm losing it. But on the fence about whether it's something paranormal.
It's a little ambiguous.
Thank you.
Yeah,
that
sure.
That was the word I was looking for.
Which is funny because I had never read it that way until we talked about it in our
yeah,
preview.
Yeah, I think... Okay, so we'll talk about the ending.
Sure.
How do you read it?
I mean, in terms of what's going on, like, what's actually happening, I mean, I never read into anything more than, no, she gave birth to the devil's child, and it's what you're seeing is what's happening. Mm-hmm. My questioning of the ending was always, did she or did she not go along with it? Did she kill the baby? Did mm-hmm. she? Because that's very ambiguous right at the end there. They don't really tell you, and that's kind of, I always enjoy endings like that. Because then you can kind of create your own idea of what's going to happen next. And I know there was a made-for-TV sequel movie called Whatever Happened to Rosemary's Baby.
It's oh, really?
Not good. So don't seek it out.
This is not a movie that demands.
No, it is not. It's been remade, too, recently.
It was always Soldado, wasn't it? Yeah.
I don't know how good that was.
I think there was that an ABC?
I believe so, yeah. But anyway, my interpretation was always, there's a bit there where she's looking over the bassinet, right? And the baby's crying. Mm-hmm. And then if you notice, she does something interesting. She does something off frame with her hand. And you can't tell if she's like soothing, like touching the baby or what she's doing. And then the baby stops crying. So I always read into that as like, she's snuffing out the baby.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which is dark. But that's why I always run into that. Like she's taking a blanket or a pillow or something and she's put it over the baby's head or something.
Wow. Okay.
Which, is, like I said, I know that's really nasty, but this is kind of a nasty movie. So that's my reading that I've always had on it.
What an ending.
Yeah. That she gets in there and she's like...
Done. Yeah.
Yep. See ya, baby. Yeah. If that is the ending, sorry.
No,
if that is
please.
The ending, there's a lot going on there in terms of like... Like a right to choose, kind of.
Yeah, another level. Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
That's in there somewhere. You got a woman who's 68. Their women are still trying to kind of, they're becoming more independent. They're finding their voice. You're seeing women get involved in activist movements and stuff like never before. And here she shows up with this kind of mod haircut, mm-hmm. and her husband's like, it looks disgusting. Like, he's like really mean about it.
What a shit he is.
He's such a shit. A shit is really the right word for him. And like, so like, you have this woman who's trying to kind of find her independence and trying to have a voice and a say in her child and her future. And everybody's shooting her down at every cost. Her doctors are shooting her down. Male doctors. Her husband's shooting her down. Her neighbor's shooting her down. Like, everybody's shooting her down. And the only people who actually, like, comfort her or, like, actually say something's wrong, Rosemary, are her female friends at the party.
Yeah.
When she has that breakdown. They're the only ones that, like, can see something's wrong, legitimately. Her doctor friend can, too. The elderly gentleman who I believe gets killed in the car crash later on, like a freak car crash. Mm-hmm. He can, too, but even he's skeptical about, like, oh, you just need to just take more vitamins,
take
Rosemary.
A nap, Rosemary.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, quit your bitching, Rosemary. You know, like,
you got all day. You don't have a chance.
Yeah, exactly. There's something going on there, though. If that is the, if my interpretation is what goes, what happens there at the end, even if it's not, there's something about.
I like that interpretation a lot, actually.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You may have convinced me. I cool. thought it was just a, I thought the last scene was just the fruition of her mental breakdown throughout
sure.
the course of the movie. Just by being told by everybody, don't do this, don't do that, do this, don't do that. Your hair's shitty.
That's so mean.
I know.
God, he's an asshole.
I thought it was a nice, it's nice hair.
Too. Looks like nice.
Yeah, she does look yeah. nice. She gets, Mia Farrow's very good in this.
Yeah, she's really good.
She,
yeah.
yeah, she gets very skinny and sickly at times, but she plays it very well. Mia Farrow's good in pretty much anything I've ever seen her.
Yeah,
in,
so. She's an impressive actress. She yeah. doesn't get enough credit, I don't think.
No, no. A lot of Woody Allen, very good in all Woody Allen movies.
Yeah.
She knew how to pick them.
Yeah.
The directors.
She did.
Yeah, I don't have too much more to say about this one. There's some interesting stuff around the time. There's that magazine that almost seems like the entire movie is kind of spun out of that Time magazine cover where it asks on the cover in large red text, "Is God Dead?" which is like an actual magazine from April 8th, 1966. I think that's really interesting to look at around that time because of every terrible thing that was going on in the world. Mm-hmm. Like, that was the cover of Time magazine. The article inside is a lot more nuanced than that. It's like an interview with different theologians throughout the world. I'm not going to get into religion here because I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. I just think it's an interesting...
No, that sounds interesting.
It plays an interesting part, I think, in this movie. Even with the argument, I guess, not the argument, but the discussion we had about what happens at the end of it.
Sure.
And the one guy just flat out starts screaming, God is dead, Satan lives at the end.
He's losing his mind. Can I just state real quick before we move on, too, that in a time period when a lot of horrible, horrible things were happening, and we were seeing footage of the Vietnam War, mm-hmm. right? And we were becoming, day by day, we were becoming more and more desensitized to what we were seeing. Polanski's genius, because Polanski goes, what could still shock an audience with all this stuff going on in the world right now? And the answer is naked old people orgy.
Right.
And he right. was right.
Well, that was repeated again like 10 or so years later, wasn't it, in the Sentinel?
Yeah.
There was a naked old people orgy.
Hey, if you want to shock your audience, naked old people orgy.
I feel like there are a couple more.
There's plenty of naked old people orgies.
Yeah, I mean, it's a horrifying thing.
It's a horror trope at this point.
We'll do a list of them.
Yeah. We'll do a top 10. Yeah, we'll do like an Uproxx style top 10 list of
favorite old people orgies.
We're not going to do that.
Good movie. Here's the thing. I've gotten to in my 30s, me personally, not much offends me, or I don't take offense to much, but that's me. I will never tell anybody not to watch something or not get offended by something based on their own personal life. So it's kind of one of those things with Polanski, a lot like Woody Allen, a lot like certain people.
Victor Salva. The horror director, another example.
Yeah, Jeepers Creepers, where it's up to you.
If you choose not to watch somebody's films because of their things they've done in their non-professional life, in their personal life, I'm not going to
no, me
be
neither.
Mad at you for that.
No, me neither.
You know.
The thing with this one is it comes in 68, and this is the year before, and this is also fascinating to me. It's the year before his wife, Sharon Tate, got murdered by the Manson family with his unborn child.
Which is scarier than anything in any of the movies we're talking about.
And that's, I think a lot of people, there is a good documentary on Polanski. It was on HBO. I think it was called Wanted and Desired with Roman Polanski. It was on 10 or 15 years ago. Very good. Watch it if you're interested in the entire story of it all. But that seems to be kind of the breaking point. He would make Chinatown after that, but that seems to be kind of where everybody agrees.
Yeah, Frantic was pretty well received too, if I remember right. Yeah,
but as far as he goes personally, I think that's kind of what people point to.
Yeah.
But even with me, like I will say, when I said the Cosby Show was on a couple days ago when I was watching it, and the thing with Cosby is he's a moralizer. And, like, that's kind of his whole shtick. And I was sitting there watching him teach a lesson at the end of the Cosby Show, and I was sitting there going, like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And like, all right, Bill.
Yeah, it's hard to...
It's hard to digest that. So I get it. I totally do. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Hopefully you guys don't dislike us for watching Rosemary's Baby and enjoying it. But quite frankly, it's a piece of art, you know, and it...
Mm-hmm.
Believe me, there are plenty of people throughout history that... did really, really horrible things that wound up being remembered for their work, you know?
Right.
So.
No, I think it's an important film, especially this year.
Yeah.
We're going to move on to something a little lighter, Willie.
Yeah, I feel depressed now, dude.
No, that's what I'm here for.
Yeah, thanks for that, Tim.
We're going to play the dating game. Oh, dating game was big in the 60s.
This is the Newlywed Game?
The Newlywed Game, thank you.
Yeah.
The Newlywed Game was... We're not going to... play the dating game. That would be, I don't know how we would pull that off. I don't remember too much about the structure of the show. The Newlywed Game, though, I remember you asked questions.
Yeah,
a couple of newlyweds get on there,
and it's like
we talk about making whoopee,
you know, like how you have like a work wife.
Yes,
you know, like that's always like a thing, like you're my podcast husband.
Exactly.
So this is perfect for us. Yep. This is great. We're not going to do well, I don't think.
No, I don't think so either. So we've got 10 questions here. We're going to try to guess what the answer is the other person.
Okay.
You ready to just start it off? You ready to just kick into it?
I'm ready. So how are we doing this? Am I guessing yours? Are you guessing mine? Are you just swapping?
I'm going to ask you. So the first question, your third favorite John Carpenter movie.
Mm.
So I'm going to ask you that.
Sure. I haven't watched the game in a long time.
I'm going to guess it. That's what I'm going to do.
You're going to guess what mine is. Yep.
Guess what yours is.
Sure.
I'll read the question. I'll guess what yours is, and then you'll guess what mine is.
Sounds great.
You ready?
Let's do it.
So the first question, your third favorite John Carpenter movie. Willie, I believe that you said Prince of Darkness.
I didn't actually put down Prince of Darkness.
Okay.
I debated between that and another one. So half point for you. Big Trouble in Little China.
Very nice.
Yes.
Very nice.
And for you, I guessed it would be They Live.
Ooh, that's another good one. I said Big Trouble in Little China.
Wow.
What's going to be funny is when we guess different things, and because we're so simpatico as it is.
I know.
Just going to be the same thing.
It's going to be hilarious.
Number two, I asked you to name the least ideal place to make whoopee in a horror movie. Whoopee, a Newlywed Game trope. They love to say whoopee.
Whoopee, yeah.
Make whoopee for having sex. What's funny is they said way more offensive stuff on like 60s TV show, but
I know,
they would
right?
not say have sex.
I know, yeah. How dare
they? Whoopee. Willie, I'm going to say the least ideal place to make whoopee in a horror movie. I'm going to say you said a car.
I went with porta potty. There's a lot of those in horror
That's
movies.
That's funny. They're my answer. Good. I'm glad you went with it.
For you, I'm going to go, this was tough. I'm going to go in a tent. In the woods.
Oh, no.
Okay.
I said a bed.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I should have said an old orgy.
An old person orgy.
Old person orgy, yeah.
At the Castavets.
I'm going to skip this one, come back to it at the end, because it'll be a great segue. I'm a professional here. Your favorite Jason Voorhees kill from all the movies.
Oh, man.
Willie, I'm going to say that you said the sleeping bag kill, where he picks up the sleeping bag and drills it into a tree.
It's up there, but it's not my top.
My top is
the face smash from part four, where the guy with the beautiful face gets his head crushed in, like, because it's so mean. You remember that? He's in the shower. He's post-coitus. He's feeling great. He's singing along. And then he just, like, comes in and just shoves his face into the wall.
That is really good.
Yeah.
Part four?
Part four, yeah.
Okay.
For you, I'm going to go with the... this was tough. I went weird with this one. I'm going to go with the the demon kill in part 5 because of Ooh Baby.
Oh, it is really good.
Yeah.
I said the sleeping bag.
Oh, okay.
It is my favorite.
Okay.
It was between that and the face freeze.
In that was my second guess for you. It was really, liquid nitrogen.
I really like that kill.
Yep.
I think that is one of the better kills in all of them.
Okay.
Then I asked you and myself, who would direct your ideal Nightmare on Elm Street movie now? So if they were making a new Nightmare on Elm Street, kind of like in the same vein as they're making another Halloween, who would be the director you chose to make that?
Okay.
I said James Wan.
Oh, that's not bad. my answer was Alex Garland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That is a really good answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For you, you know, I'm going to go... I thought Scott Derrickson would be a...
Derrickson is good. This is such a boring answer, but I'm going to try to make it interesting. He's all over the place. He's very hot right now. Jordan Peele.
Oh.
And the reason I went with this is not because... I think a lot of people, and I thought the first thing that popped in my head was like a visual director, because you want to see cool.
Absolutely.
But visually, Get Out has got some cool stuff in it,
too. It does.
And when I hear Jordan Peele talks, he reminds me a lot of Wes.
Yeah?
In a lot of ways.
Yeah, honestly, that's a good pick.
Yeah.
I would like that. I'd like Alex Garland, too.
Yeah.
Either one of those.
No,
Alex Garland, just watching like Ex Machina, like I was just like, this is so trippy and out there, and like he could do some crazy shit.
I know. What was the other dude? The dude that the one that oh, is it Vincenzo Natali? The dude that did Cube?
Yeah.
And Splice?
Yeah.
He popped up my head too. Just visually, I think
he could do something.
Interesting stuff. All right. Name one horror movie you would like to see rebooted. Like series or whatever. Oh, I skipped one. We'll come back to it. I'm going to say you said Resident Evil.
Oh, that's a really good guess. I went with The Burning.
Oh, good.
I'd love to see a modern Burning update.
Good. We're in the same vein of what
we need a summer camp slasher.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For you, I went Friday the 13th because I know you're just begging for a new Friday
yeah,
the 13th.
Yeah, I've just given up on that, so yeah, I didn't even pick it. I picked Urban Legend.
Oh.
I want to see a new Urban Legend movie. I think there's still some stuff we can do.
Yeah, you can
with
do
Urban
some stuff.
Legend.
Yeah, you could do some stuff with that.
Yeah.
For sure.
What's your favorite horror movie Whoopi scene? They make Whoopi. Oh yeah, what you want to guess mine? We'll switch it up here.
Okay. I'm gonna go. Oh man, I'm thinking about going the same as mine, but I'm not going to. Favorite Whoopi scene? I'm gonna go the Monkey Shine scene.
Shit, that's really good.
Yeah,
that's not it, but you're really good. I'm glad you brought it up. I said because it's fresh in my mind. The shunting from Society.
Oh.
And I just thought it'd be funny.
Oof. Yikes.
I think it's beautiful. I think it's tasteful. For and you can read if you want to. I wrote something on the show.
Yeah, check it out.
The Society. Willie, I'm going to say this is the first one that popped in because I really like it. Because I think it's really funny, actually. It's the Friday the 13th reboot sex scene. With the dude with the blonde hair.
When he says she'd win in a titty contest?
He keeps saying things like that during it, and it's so fucking goofy.
There's a point, and I'm really sorry if I offend anybody. This is a quote from the movie.
Yeah.
Where he says, and this is the line, "Your titties are just so juicy, dude." It's the dumbest, douchiest line.
He is one of my favorite characters at
all. He's so good.
He's so funny.
He's kind of the basis for Chad. And
In the game? Yeah. The unrated version of that cut, though, of that scene, goes on way too long, and it's kind of skeevy.
Yeah, it gets kind of weird.
The scene's skeevy enough to begin with.
But it gets really skeevy.
It gets really skeevy, like, hey, guys.
Let's tone it down. I'm actually going to go with another Friday the 13th sex scene, and it's from Jason Goes to Hell. When the young lady is ripped in half. That's a really good one.
That is really good. That happens right at the point of climax.
It does.
Too.
Yeah. When a fountain of blood shoots up.
God.
So bad.
Well, it's better than The Shunting.
Yeah, it sure is.
Your favorite current horror director? I just went with James Wan for you.
Adam Wingard is my...
That's a good choice.
I'm going to go with... Oh, God. Now, of course, I'm like blanking on his name. The gentleman who directed Hush. Mike Flanagan.
Mike Flanagan's good. I guess mine's kind of a cop out because he hasn't done one in a while. But I said Neil Marshall.
Okay, no, yeah. Neil Marshall counts.
Have we got one right?
No.
Okay, good.
We're not doing well here.
Favorite Whoopi Goldberg performance.
I like that. Good. I just now got why you put that in there. By the way, I literally didn't realize what you're doing. I'm like, why is he talking about Whoopi Goldberg?
Willie, I'm going to say you said Sister Act 2.
Oh, I'm not a big Sister Act fan, actually. I went with Ghost.
She is good in Ghost.
Because there's a part where she's possessed by Patrick Swayze, and I think she kisses Demi Moore. It's really funny to me. and for that reason. For you, I'm going to go Theodore Rex.
Oh, you're close. It's around the same time period.
Okay.
You remember movie Eddie? Where she played the GM of the New York Knicks?
I sure do.
I used to love that movie.
Yeah, okay.
It had a song, All the Way Live, by Coolio.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Eddie is mine.
That's a good one.
Rank, okay, here's one, I think we might get this one. Okay, rank the first four Living Dead movies, or okay. Dead movies, Romero Dead movies.
Okay.
You do mine first, what you thought.
I'm going to go Dawn, Night, Day, Land.
Nailed it.
Yep.
Yeah, good job. With you, I'm going to go Dawn, Day, Night, Land.
Day, Dawn, Night, Land. You're a one-off.
Day, damn it. I thought you were good. Like, did you argue in your head rather to put Day or Dawn first?
Or yes. I was debating. Yeah. No, I was debating.
Because I did too. I went, man, I thought in the end Dawn would win out.
I was debating. It was like Big Trouble and Prince of Darkness. I was debating which one I was going to put.
Okay.
Yeah. And in that moment, Big Trouble felt right, so.
All right. So you're up 1-0 for the final, going into the final one. This,
right.
I think I might tie you here. Your favorite non-Godzilla kaiju monster.
Now, you're meaning a kaiju that is not Godzilla, correct?
Yes.
Okay. For you, I'm going to guess. This is tough. I'm going to go with Mechagodzilla for you.
Oh, no.
No?
Mothra.
Mothra.
I really love. And most of it is because I really love the first Mothra movie.
Yeah, it's sweet.
It's so weird.
It's funny. This one that I, my guess is also because I really love the first movie of this character.
Okay. I said Baragon.
It's actually not.
Okay.
Which I know you wouldn't think by my recent tweeting. It's actually Rodan.
Rodan? Okay.
Yeah. I have a soft spot for Rodan. He's not the most interesting or exciting because he's just kind of a pterodactyl, pteranodon type thing. But, that was one of the first kaiju movies I ever saw, if not the first, was Rodan, the original Rodan.
Cool.
And, yeah. So he has a very special place in my heart.
So that's a newlywed game. We don't know each other very well, apparently.
Yeah, it's okay.
These were pretty vague general questions, though.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot of different ways we could go with the answer.
I never bought into this newlywed game anyway.
No. Most of those couples look severely unhappy on that. If you were in a newlywed and your first thought is, let's go on a game show, you got some.
They're not doing good.
Let's go into the last movie, Will.
All right, let's do it.
Destroy All Monsters.
Yeah.
Here's the plot to this one. Female aliens take control of Earth's monsters and begin using them to destroy the human race. That's it.
Pretty much.
Women, huh?
Yeah, right? Am I right? God. This is another know-your-role type thing.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, kind of.
Well, this is them fighting back.
That's true.
Yeah, which good for them.
Yeah, and then monsters. Yeah. Of which there are no female monsters, I don't think. Well, I guess, is Mothra? Does it matter, I guess? I don't really know. Anyway.
Willie, you are the Godzilla expert. I'm gonna turn this one over to you. I'll jump in when I feel like it. I've seen a few Godzilla movies. The problem is they've been all out of sequence. I have no idea which ones I've watched.
It's tricky, yeah.
I like quite a few of them, but it's hard for me to rate them. I really like Mothra, and I really like the first ones, first Godzilla for sure, the Japanese one.
The original.
It's the original one. It's so dark.
Yep. It really is.
I think people forget how dark it is. The American version is pretty dark, too.
They both are, yeah. Japanese is slightly, I feel like it's a little darker.
Yep.
Part of that's just because it's the Japanese making a film that's about nuclear
war. Around
that
time period.
Yeah.
But I know you quite enjoy Godzilla movies.
Love them. Absolutely love them.
So I'll just say this before I think Monster Island is so cool. I wish we could have just spent the whole day there.
I like that they call it Monster Land in this movie.
Yeah.
Like it's an amusement park.
And I liked this movie. I had fun with it. I don't know where it ranks among Godzilla experts. I think there are parts where it drags, but to me that's like every Godzilla movie.
This is very much Godzilla movie pacing.
Yes.
At its finest. This one may be a little more extreme than some of the other ones. I'll say that I was surprised by how, I'm not going to say boring, but by how human-focused this one was.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot just how little actual monster action there was in this one. And I think it's because it's called Destroy All Monsters. And B, this one is largely considered the best of the first era of Godzilla films, the Showa era. And oftentimes it's in the top three or five Godzilla movies of any era. So this one's pretty well regarded by fans of the series. But when I really when I started doing some research onto this specific film, I started to realize why it was such a huge deal when it came out. And I think you're going to enjoy this. This is one of the first examples of a shared universe, which is all the rage now in all of cinema.
Yes.
I mean, it's taking over because of the success of the Marvel movies. So Toho is the company that owns Godzilla and many of these other characters. They decide, here we go, we got all these monsters. We've made, they all have their individual movies, okay? So like Anguirus had a bit in Godzilla Raids Again, which is the second Godzilla movie. Okay, the sequel to the original. So we're going to bring him back, right? And then they're like, well, we have Baragon from Frankenstein Conquers the World, because Baragon fights a giant Frankenstein in that movie. Let's bring Baragon in, right? Basically, if they had a suit left over, they were bringing that monster. Gorosaurus started off in King Kong Escapes. Gorosaurus was an enemy of King Kong in that movie. And then Manda is from a movie called Atragon. He was the villain in that. And finally, Varin was from Varin the Unbelievable. He's that kind of flying squirrel-looking dragon guy.
That doesn't, I like him.
He's awesome because he doesn't actually participate in any of the action. He just kind of floats around like a doof.
Yeah, that would be me. He's my favorite kaiju monster.
He's so cool. Yeah, you'd just be chilling in the back like, what's up, boys?
Like Silver Surfer in the second Fantastic Four.
Uh-huh.
Or no, not Dr. Doom on Silver Surfer's surfboard. That's a joke for everybody.
Just flying around.
He just, the world's about to end. Dr. Doom is just riding around on Silver Surfer's
surfboard. Just wants a party.
For no reason. That would be me.
Varin likes to party.
Yep.
So this was them bringing all these monsters together, and this is going to be their big, giant, like, monster extravaganza. It was intended to be the final Godzilla film.
A monster rally, if you will.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And when the action happens, when the big throwdown happens in the last little bit of this movie here, it's pretty fantastic stuff.
It is.
It's good stuff. It's wonderful guy in rubber suit battles, for sure. And if you can't see past the fact that it's guys in rubber suits, you're going to have a hard time with this movie. There's no doubt about that. But I don't have a hard time dealing with that. In fact, I find it quite charming and a lot of fun. Let's talk about the monsters here. I want to talk with you about monsters real quick.
Okay.
Let's have some fun here. I'm gonna say one of the monster's names, and I want you to tell me what you think about him.
Okay.
Godzilla.
A classic.
Yeah.
My favorite. Can I tell you what I love about this movie?
Tell me what you love about this movie.
I love that they play the monster's themes as they enter the picture. And I think they do it sometimes in, like, I think the Avengers does it too, don't they? I love that. It's such a cool touch.
They play like the individual themes.
They play the individual themes for the monsters.
Yep.
And I adore Godzilla's theme. I think it's the coolest theme of all time. It's so baller. And
it's so sweet.
The Godzilla theme and the Psycho theme are two themes that I can't hear without thinking they're immediately going to go into rap music. The Psycho theme I always think is going to go into Busta Rhymes, Give Me Some More. And then Godzilla, I always think, is going to turn into Simon Says by Pharoah Monch. So that's,
I love it.
So that's another reason. So, like, I get really into it. I start nodding my head.
It's so sweet. Okay. What do you think about Mothra?
Mothra is my favorite.
Yeah.
Not Godzilla. That Mothra movie. Mothra is such a weird concept.
And
it is. That first Mothra movie is so weird. But Mothra's cool. I even like when it's the little...
Larval
Mothra. Yeah.
All right. Rodan. How do you feel about Rodan?
Rodan's cute. Rodan's a cutie pie. Yeah. He's like the pterodactyl type.
Mm-hmm.
I like him. He reminds me kind of like of a Power Rangers type monster.
Sure.
I'm sure Power Rangers are probably based on that, but yeah.
What do you think of Minya?
Minya is...
Godzilla Jr.
Oh, I always call him Baby Godzilla. I mean, he sucks.
Yeah.
Right. We can all agree on that, right? Does anybody like Baby Godzilla?
No. Baby Godzilla gets cool in the second era because he actually looks like a little Godzilla. You know, like he's cute, but he looks like Godzilla. He doesn't look like whatever that weird pudgy, like, Pillsbury Doughboy thing is. Yeah, no one likes Minya.
Right.
I mean, that's just the way it is. All right.
You can chime in with your thoughts on these.
Yeah, I got one more. Baragon. What do you think of Baragon?
Baragon. Let me refresh my memory with Baragon.
He's the one I tweeted. He's got the big floppy ears and the horn on the front.
Yeah, Baragon's cute too.
He's adorable, right?
He's kind of cuddly. He kind of looks like my bulldog a little bit with a horn.
That's what I thought you were going to say. I was hoping you were going to mention that.
Yeah.
He looks like Jonesy a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah, yeah. So.
Like, if you could get a Baragon plushie, you would do it, right?
He would probably be, other than the new American Godzilla with the big gut.
Yeah.
That I like. He would be the most cuddly, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, he reminds me a little bit of the Happabore from...
Oh my
Star
God,
Wars:
The
Force Awakens. Yeah, very adorable.
That was going to sweep the nation, but only had one seed.
Yeah, it's not cool.
Barely in it. He's still adorable.
He's adorable. Anyway, okay, enough of that. You know, yeah, this does suffer from the classic Godzilla pacing. When there's stuff going on with the people, it's not terribly interesting. It's pretty straightforward.
Excuse me, what is Frankenstein versus Baragon? Sorry.
That's another name for Frankenstein versus the world, or whatever it was called.
Okay.
Toho decided that they wanted to make more kaiju movies, mm-hmm. and they thought, well, what's a better way than to have Frankenstein's monster grow into a giant, you know what I mean? Like, he's an already existing character, we can just make him a giant Frankenstein's monster. Actually, you ever see King Kong versus Godzilla, original?
Yeah. I quite like that one, too.
Sure, absolutely. You ever wonder why King Kong can randomly shoot lightning in the movie?
Yes.
That's because the original film was King Kong versus Frankenstein.
Okay.
And so King Kong was going to fight Frankenstein's monster who could shoot lightning because of the bolts.
I love that they call him Frankenstein, too.
Yeah.
Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah, yeah.
There's this great joke. It's a picture of the end of someone's taken the end of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. And at the end, they wrote, and then Frankenstein said, "It's okay if you call me just Frankenstein. I don't care."
That's so good.
Sorry, but continue. I interrupted.
No. Yeah, so that was
so
why.
He could shoot. So the Frankenstein monster could shoot lightning.
Yeah, because of the bolts on his neck. Right, exactly.
Okay. Okay.
But so they were instead of like actually writing a new script, they were like, well, let's just make King Kong Frankenstein and we'll throw Godzilla in it.
That's fair.
That's what I love about the Toho ones. Is like, what monsters we got, what costumes we got laying around. Okay, put that guy in it. It's so sweet. Yeah, this is not my favorite of the series. Which might be blasphemy for fans of the series. It's not my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to really think long and hard about what that is, but it's not this one. I'd say it's one of the better from the first era for sure. But
okay.
But that's
what's your favorite era?
The Heisei.
84 to 95.
Yeah, that's okay. My favorite era. I dig it because it's got continuity, whereas the other eras really don't have a continuity. I appreciate a good continuity in a film series. So if you start with Godzilla, the original Godzilla, and then you watch Godzilla Returns, or 85, all the way through it, it's a legitimate story that's
okay.
told. Even I don't know if you remember the Oxygen Destroyer from the original Godzilla, mm-hmm. the thing that kills him, it comes into play in the final Heisei movie.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, the Oxygen Destroyer comes back into play, and it's really cool, because it creates the final monster he fights, called Destroya.
Yeah. I'm aware of Destroya.
Destroya, yeah. He's like a crustacean guy. But yeah, no, I don't know. I dig kaiju movies. And look, this is borderline horror. Like, it's not... I count giant monster movies
Me
as horror
too.
Movies, sci-fi horror movies, but I could see where somebody would be like, what the hell are they talking about this movie for? You know what I mean?
We're talking about it because it's hard to find anything else from 68.
No, plus it's awesome.
And plus it's awesome. And yeah, I think this is a horror movie. And plus, you're right. Shared universes are all the rage right now. We're about to get another Universal one. Universal was kind of the originator when it came to stuff like that.
And they're coming back and doing it again.
They're coming back and doing it again. So yeah. This is an example of a shared universe that happened in 1968.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, no, I think it's worth, Destroy All Monsters is worth checking out.
And plus we were doing Rosemary's Baby and Night of the Living Dead. To like classics.
Yep.
We might as well throw in Destroy All Monsters, I say.
Yeah, for sure.
Like how I'm defending it against the straw man who has never made this argument. Vehemently defending our choice.
But yeah, if you want to, I think if you want to check out a pretty solid entry into the Godzilla series, this is it.
Destroyer is kind of stupid looking. I'm going to say that. I'm looking at him right now.
Yeah, he's kind of a big demon looking guy.
I mean, stupid in a good way, though.
Yeah, my favorite Godzilla villain is Space Godzilla.
Space Godzilla?
Because that's awesome to me. Mm-hmm. Like, they were starting to run out of ideas. And they're like, what can we do? Let's make it a Space Godzilla.
He has these two, like, shoulder.
He's sweet.
Things out of
He's
like,
got, like, mountains on his shoulders.
Yeah.
Yeah, he can shoot lightning out of him. It's pretty bitchin'.
Biante.
Biolante?
Biolante.
Yeah,
Biolante. Biante. Like Beyonce.
Biolante is cool, too. Yeah, if you honestly, if
who don't you like? Who's like your least favorite?
Least favorite,
other than Baby Godzilla.
Other than him.
Varan. I'm gonna tell you right now, Varan is hilarious.
So freaking cool. look up King Caesar.
King Caesar.
Yeah, look up King Caesar.
Oh, there's Jet Jaguar.
Everybody who's listening, I love Jet Jaguar. Everybody's looking. Look up King Caesar and tell me it's not the funniest thing you've ever seen in your entire life.
What is that?
Exactly.
He looks like some sort of dumb wolf.
I know. So, yeah, he's my least favorite, but also kind of my
favorite.
It's
a he?
Yes.
He has breast coverings.
Yeah.
All right. He's got kind of a gut, too. He does not look like he's been in good shape.
No.
He's not been running.
Maybe I kind of love him, actually. I don't know.
He's pretty cool.
No, some of the ones in the 2000s. The millennium era, kind of boring. Like when you get into there's one called Megagyrus.
I'm gonna look at him.
And he's just kind of a big bug. That kind of stuff bores me. Like I don't want to just see him watch a big bug.
He does look like a big
bug. Or like Ebera. Ebera kind of sucks. Ebera's just a giant lobster. I'm not joking. Like it's just a big lobster that Godzilla fights.
Ebera?
Ebera. Ebirah.
R-A-H.
Ebera. Yeah, Ebera, Horror of the Deep. He's just a big lobster.
Oh, yeah, I kind of like him.
Yeah, and him and Godzilla spend the whole movie just throwing rocks at each other. It's really stupid.
Now, did you like the Muto?
I did like the Muto.
I kind of like the Muto, too.
They were kind of cool, because they had their own, their own biology and stuff like that.
They had, a mating ritual, too.
It was cool,
had sex with each other on screen, if I recall.
They sure do, yeah. Surrounded by, nuclear waste, because you got to have that around.
I liked the new Godzilla.
Yeah. I was a fan too. Mm-hmm. I'll defend that movie.
Yep, me too.
I do not feel bad about doing that. So,
yeah. So we both like Destroy All Monsters.
Go absolutely
check it out. You should probably watch the other two we talked about first, though, if you haven't seen them. Once again, if you haven't seen them, I don't know.
I mean,
maybe you haven't. Maybe you're not necessarily a horror fan, and you like to listen to the show because you like our personalities that much.
Yeah, maybe. But it's worth checking out for sure. And I would check out some of the Heisei era films. I think those are a little more accessible.
Is that where you would start? Where would you, if I'm a so I'm a novice?
I say watch original Godzilla because you kind of have to.
Yep.
In my opinion. And then jump into Godzilla 85 and see what you feel about it. If you're enjoying the Godzilla series as you go through the Heisei series, then go back and give the some of the older ones a shot too.
Gotcha.
Just to see what you feel.
Yeah.
I think it's hard to throw people directly into the original.
It's kind of like a Doctor Who type deal.
Exactly. Depending on how much you like the newer stuff, let that be the guide for whether or not you try to delve deeper.
Star Trek is another example I can think of too.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. What's your favorite non-Godzilla movie in the Godzilla and the?
What's my favorite non-Godzilla
the one
kaiju?
About a different character.
Rodan's pretty good.
The movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do like Rodan quite a bit. But I do like Mothra too. Mm-hmm. Those two are probably the best of that bunch. So.
Cool, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Let's wrap it up.
All right. Well.
Willie, where can the people leave feedback for us?
Facebook.com/horrormovieyearbook. We are on Twitter @HMYearbook. You can also email us horrormovieyearbook@gmail.com. Don't forget to rate and review. As always, a big thanks to, I want to mention, we mentioned John Morrell for our
yes.
music, as always.
Yeah, and listen to us. We're going to be, we'll tweet about it, we'll Facebook about it, we'll send out flyers. We're going to be on the Game Nerds to play some Friday the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about it a little bit. Not the original Friday the 13th.
Right.
The new one. Isn't there an Easter egg with an old game?
That's what I heard, but I don't see it anywhere.
Yeah, it was supposed to be an arcade game that you could play the old game on, right?
I thought so, but...
Yeah, I don't know where that would be.
I guess that didn't happen. I don't know.
Kind
of just an unfounded rumor, too, so...
Willie, do you want to decide what we're doing next week right here on the spot?
Yeah, I think I have it.
Let's do it. Oh, do you?
I think so.
Excellent. What are we doing?
I think it's going to be 1995.
Uh-huh.
So here's our options. You ready for this?
Yes, please.
Carpenter's Village of the Damned. The Prophecy. Vampire in Brooklyn, Lord of Illusions, Species, Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers, Demon Knight, The Addiction, The Mangler, Tales from the Hood, Candyman for All of the Flesh, Castle Freak, Night of the Scarecrow, Ice Cream Man, Day of the Beast, Piranha, Extra 3, Howling New Moon Rising, The Wasp Woman, Embrace the Vampire, Leprechaun 3, Screamers, it goes on.
Rumpelstiltskin, do you remember Rumpelstiltskin?
I do.
Yeah. Serpent Slayer starring Jeff Fahey.
Seven.
Could not remember Jeff Fahey's. Yeah, Seven.
We probably won't be talking
about
Seven.
We're not going to talk about Seven.
No. I love Seven. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, but that's not something I want to talk about on this show necessarily.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about Outbreak, which is also on this
do
list.
Do you want to try to narrow it down right now?
I can tell you what. I know I want to do Demon Knight. There's no question there.
Can we do Tales from the Hood,
I know you want to do Tales from the Hood. And I mean, I do feel like Vampire in Brooklyn would make a wonderful round out for those three. But there's this weird part of me that wants to do Halloween 6. I'm not going to lie to you.
Do you want to do Halloween 6? We're throwing our rules out the window.
There's so much to talk about with Halloween 6.
The only other argument I would make here. I don't want to do Lord of Illusions. I like it, but we've covered Clive.
Sure.
Village of the Damned is, like, at best, TV movie level Carpenter.
Sure.
Like, it's good. It's fine. The Prophecy, eh. That's the walk and run, right?
Yep.
Castle Freak, I like Castle Freak. Species is the only one I think I might.
You know what? Let's do Species.
Are you sure?
Let's do it.
Are you sure?
That was a big deal when it came out, man.
I know.
Maybe we'll do a commentary for Curse of Michael Myers at some point. if you can promise me we'll
do
one of
those. I don't want to talk you out of Curse of Michael Myers.
No, because it breaks the rules, Tim. It does. You're right. The only Halloween movie we should be reviewing or talking about.
If you want to listen to us talk about Curse of Michael Myers, check out the feed of the Midwest Film Nerds.
Yes.
We do an entire Fight the Franchise, which we're planning on bringing back soon. For the Curse of Michael Myers.
We did get to talk about that.
I'm just going to put this out there. So, okay, let's do Demon Knight, Tales from the Hood, Species.
I'm cool with it.
Oh, God, what a trio. And then we are totally going to talk about Curse of Michael Myers anyway.
Yeah.
At times.
It's going to get a little 5 minute.
We might, you know what, this might be a good year to do that game.
Yeah.
Too. The pick 'em.
Flick chart.
Flick chart game.
You could flick chart it.
Because I've seen too many of these.
I've seen a lot of them. Way more 95 horror movies than I anticipated having seen.
Oh, this is Destroya.
It is. Let's just do another Godzilla movie.
Oh, God. Copycat with Sigourney Weaver.
Oh, that movie's not good.
No. Outbreak. Outbreak kind of counts.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Willie, it was wonderful as always.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you all for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you. So that's your homework for next week. Species is not homework.
It's not homework.
Species, Demon Knight, yes. And Tales from the Hood. I'm so happy right now.
I know you're excited.
This is like the year. This is like the year in my head I wanted to do something.
I know.
All right. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye, man.